Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Okay, good evening. It's yet another Sunday with Spirit of Nigeria Radio with Real Talks with Lola. And I'm here again. My name is Lola Bade Aluko. I'm a clinical psychologist based in South Africa, and I'm proudly Nigerian. I'll talk to you every Sunday. Basically, for me, is to bring about behavioral modification via media. And every week, we try to touch on different topics, different issues that affects us as human beings. And we've talked about so many different things. And this month of September, we're talking about emotional wounds. Last week, I talked with Pearl, with Precious, who was a mother of two albino children, who was able to take us through a roller coaster with being a mother with two white children, the ups and downs, and most especially, she shows us how she was able to go through the emotional wounds. Today, I have another guest with me by name Debbie Akintokunbo Idowu. Debbie is a very, very vibrant, I would say a vibrant young lady who has gone through what I will call what life throws at you. She's what you call life has thrown things at her. But hey, she's decided that, you know what, I'm not going to roll with this. I'm just going to make the best out of it. She's gone through the ups, she's gone through the downs, and she's come out strong, and she's still striding. Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Hello, good evening. I'm very well, thank you.
Like I said, she's a very vibrant young lady. You can even hear from her voice. It's so nice to have you on tonight, Debbie. And I know tonight you're going to hold no bounds. You're going to take us through what life has thrown at you. Like I said, basically what Real Talks with Lola does is we try to portray and show to the our listeners that, you know what, hey, life throws you a lot of things, but, you know, the most important thing is you getting up. Can you just please tell us a little bit about yourself before we dive right into the program?
Okay, my name is Debbie. I'm based in Lagos, Nigeria. I'm in my mid-30s. I'm a single mom of two boys who are about teenagers now. I'm a fashion designer. I studied architecture. After that, I went on to study education. What else is there? And I'm happy.
I can see from your voice that you are happy.
And oh, I mean, yes,
that's just the most important thing. Yes, we know that life, when growing up as a young woman in Nigeria, especially going through your teenage years, there's a lot of things we're not taught, but life throws things at us. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, most times, like I always say, we cannot undo those things. Mm-hmm. We can only learn to live with them. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading your story, and I was like, this is a good story to put out there. Not because it happens to you. It could happen. It happened to 1,001 people. Yeah. But again, it's just the wounds that we carry going around. I mean, when I read the article about you being a disappointment, that is what is called an emotional wound, that it just rings in your head continuously without even you knowing. It's in your subconscious. Mm-hmm. And you carry it all over the place. But you need to make a conscious effort to either to get rid of it. And that is why I call it your truth.
Yep.
Can you just give us a lowdown of how you got to your truth?
Okay, I think after I don't even know where to start from now, but I just knew that what has happened to me has happened, and I can't keep staying down. Staying down would not help me get to what I had dreamed about myself. I wouldn't achieve purpose. I wouldn't live the life I dreamed of living before issues eat me. So I said that, okay, no, what has happened has happened. Hey, babe, get up, get yourself together. It's not going to be easy, but you have to walk this journey. And then got so good. I had a good support system here and there, and then I was able to just pick myself together and move on and forge ahead. That was it.
Yeah, okay. I totally understand. You've skipped a lot of things, and that is where the learning process is. When it gets to a particular stage in our lives, like I always say as a psychologist, you need to own things. You know, there's nothing too big anymore. You just need to own things, yeah, and then move with it. You were a young mother who got pregnant.
Okay, yes, I my first pregnancy was before I turned 18. I was already in the institution. I was quite young, and I finished secondary school shortly after I turned 15.
Wow.
Shortly after I turned 15, I finished secondary school. And I actually had my O-levels before I turned 15. That was the days when NECO just came out. So I wrote my NECO in SS2, and I cleared my papers. So the dream was there. It was high. I was supposed to be a graduate at 21, get married at maybe 23. You know, coming from a home where my dad is a lecturer. He was a banker for like 25 years before going to lecturing. My mom is a nurse. So it's like we had it all planned out and all mapped out. And it was actually going on beautiful until I became pregnant. And it felt like, oh, I disappointed everybody. I disappointed myself. That was what it felt. And because I am the first of four siblings, okay. I also disappointed my siblings. So it became a thing of, I couldn't even talk to them. I couldn't even advise them. And they'd be like, you are talking, who are you talking to? You've lost the, I'd lost what the right to advise them, because I couldn't advise myself, you know? And what I tried to do was I tried to hide that first pregnancy. I didn't want anybody. Yeah. Okay, this is my first time saying this truth. My first pregnancy, okay, I tried to terminate it at 3 months. Wow. No, I actually did. But then they were so my parents got to know about it. They sat me down to ask me, what do I want with my life? I said, okay, I wanted to go back to school and this and that, and then we were fine. And then 4 months after, I got pregnant again. Now, that was when the war started. The first one was like, okay, it was a mistake, fine. But the second one, that was when everything just saw. Like, no, you can't make a mistake twice. So everybody
okay, can I ask you something?
Okay, please do.
From a professional point of view.
All right.
Do you think that it was lack of exposure? Were you very naive, or what was it that were you seeking something? Were you coming from a situation where, because I know sometimes, like you said, you were quite young, you were 17, and I'm very sure before that time you hadn't left home.
No, I was. It was a combination of the three, actually. I was naive. Good. I was a bebeto when I was much younger. I was a very forward girl. You'll see me everywhere. There's nobody I can't talk to. I was bold.
Okay.
So even at that, you think I'm exposed, but no, I wasn't exposed. I was a pure common gets inside girl.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was naive, I was not exposed. And then I was bold. So, you know, in my trying to relate to people, trying to meet people, small little pet talks got to me. Okay, then I was actually looking for something. I was looking for acceptance and attention. Yes, I was looking for acceptance and attention. I wouldn't blame it on my parents, no. But in the last part of my secondary school age, my mom had to go hustle. My dad also had to go hustle. So in the last one or two years, I was first to grow up. to become like the eagle over my siblings.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was always wanting this acceptance and attention. I was always wanting to fit in.
Yeah.
I was always wanting to fit in. And then I met someone that happened to have the sweetest mouth that I could ever know. And then, bam, I got knocked up. And that's why I could get pregnant again 4 months after the first hospital situation.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to be very honest with you. I am very happy that you are being very truthful about it, because one of the things I've noticed, and that is one thing you've said yourself, is that most of the time things are not planned, but they happen. Okay, and one of the problems people face is denial.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, from a professional point of view, that once you're still in denial, you can never sort out what the problem is.
You need to
come face to face with the problem and know that this is a problem. Because, I mean, from what you are telling me right now, I'm not one to conclude. But again, if I look at it from the other side of the table, you were one that most especially wanted to belong, you know. You just wanted to be out there. Because that is what you knew. You didn't know any better.
Mm-mm.
You didn't know any better. You understand? And from your experience, you know that a lot of young girls and young guys, this is a fundamental problem with them. We all know that.
Yeah.
Now, can I ask a very, very delicate question? And I need you to be as honest as can be, because, you know, as you are aware, this is the month of suicide awareness, you understand?
Yeah.
We're trying to educate people about it. At any point in time during all this, did you have any suicidal thoughts?
I didn't have any suicidal thoughts until 2019.
Okay.
Was that 2019 or 2018? I think it was 2019 or 2018. I can't remember, but it was between 2018 and 2019.
Okay, we'll come to that one. Now, when you were pregnant, tell me what was going. I mean, tell our audience so that we can learn from it. The first one, you thought. You see, the mistake with the first one is that it got sorted. You just felt, it's easy. I can always sort it out. Then, I think lack of sexual education, was part of your problems then. Then the second one happened.
Okay, no. It wasn't lack of sexual education per se. Let's be honest. My mom did her best.
Okay, good.
Mom tried. She did her best. Because she's a nurse. So she tried her best. No, she tried her best. I give it to that woman. She tried her best. But, you know, okay, there's this thing about me that also happens presently. Anytime I fall sick, I take ill, I don't get to use drugs. Because I just do this. Shebi, my mom is a nurse, she knows what to do. So I just get to underestimate. So what I did was I underestimate the power of the information I had or that I was exposed to.
Okay.
I took it lightly. Exactly.
You took it for granted.
I'm still like that sometimes. I have this in control. I'm sorry. You know, it happens to me like that. So I think that's what I did when I eventually got pregnant. And then it's funny that so I got pregnant for the first one. I went back to school. I finished my MD. I got a placement in Ibadan for my CWAS. I was working. But because I wanted to be better, I wanted to be a better mother for my child, I wanted to be exposed. I mean, it's not easy studying architecture and being pregnant and being a mother. I wanted to be exposed, I wanted to be there. So I relocated from wherever to Lagos for my HND, for my IA National Diploma. And then towards the end of my first year, I got pregnant again.
Of your HND?
That was how I had my second son. And at that point, I'll say something in Yoruba. I don't know how you help me to interpret it. I had that proverb first from my dad. He said, "Eni to ba mo nshin je, o gbodo mo ronu eyo." I had that proverb first from my dad, and that proverb had been like my like what I run with since after my first child came. Like what has happened has happened. You can't dwell. Keep moving. Start moving. Keep moving. Start moving. You can't dwell. Whatever it is, shall move. Don't dwell. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was why I wasn't able to give suicide a thought. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But because I was always moving, I wasn't relaxing. I wasn't ready to relax. I wasn't ready to stop. That's what it's telling me.
Okay, but don't you feel that like you said, your daddy had the proverb. Unfortunately, I don't understand the proverb, but it must.
Okay, let me say it in the most basic way I can say. Like whatever actions you take, be ready to suffer the consequences, whether good or bad.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's the meaning. Whatever actions you take, be ready to suffer the consequences, whether good or bad.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, when, like you said, you were able to quickly put aside what happens to you. Okay,
yes,
you were able to, but I'm very sure you felt very hurt.
I was terribly hurt. Oh no, I was terribly hurt. I was terribly hurt because number one, it felt like I'd lost my face everywhere. Me, that was the pride of everybody, now became something that people had to run away from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people had to run away from.
It became a reference point.
Yeah, a negative reference point.
Reference point, yeah.
Then the father of my child, he, unfortunately, we were both students.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was going through fire. He was also going through fire, but maybe because I'm a lady, and you know how we ladies act sometimes. He was going through fire wherever I was adding my own fire to it, so it made it worse. So at some point, it just disappeared into thin air.
Wow. Okay.
It just disappeared into thin air, and I was the one that was now looking for him. I call him on phone. I travel to go look for him wherever he is. I tried to beg him for the sake of the boy. Like, no, we can't. I did not. Raising a son without his dad is never one of the things I thought would ever happen to me. Because I love.
But you were both young.
Yeah, but I don't know. I wanted to run away. People started talking. Okay, that's another part of it. People started talking to me that, oh, we marry you as a single mother. I was just 19 then, when I had my second, my first child. Now I was just 19. Who would marry a single mother? If your son grows up, he's going to blame you for separating him from his father. You have to go back and look for him. You have to this. You have to that. People build together. Both of you can build together. Both of you can start together. And all the whatever it is they could say. And then I went looking for him. This is all that I have abused the life out of his head. So I had to go and start apologizing again. And he was using me to do plenty shakara. And then inside the begging, apologizing, and plenty shakara, I got pregnant the second time. Then the kukuma disappeared. Like, hello, how would you get pregnant again? I'm sorry, I'm not the owner. I'm not responsible for this one. And then it disappeared.
Okay, so are you trying to tell me? I mean, we're going to go deeper after we take a break soon, okay? But before we get to that break, do you think? From, I mean, being very truthful about this whole issue now, do you think pressure, societal pressure, played any role?
Yes, societal pressure had a part to play in my situation. Societal pressure had a part to play because it's one thing to not know what you want for yourself.
Okay.
It's another thing to know what you want, but then you allow people to misguide you. I think that was what happened to me. Don't forget that I started from me being naive and unexposed. Even yes. as I, when I had my child, I still worse. Even though what I know what I wanted, I had a focus and all that. But listening to people that I felt were more exposed, elderly, more understanding, and you know, listening to all of them just made me feel like, okay, well, maybe I should just settle and just allow this and just go back to him and just this and just that. So maybe if I didn't listen to them, maybe the journey would have been better. Just maybe. Maybe. So, yes, he had a part to play.
Okay, now, so all that, now that you, let's go back to now when you now got pregnant the second time, I'm very sure it must have been
that one I ran away from home. No, that one I ran away from home. I disappeared. Wow. I packed my bag and my baggages. I left my son with my mom. I packed my bag and I just dropped. Apparently, my dad had been suspect. No, okay, what happened when I was in school? I was also trying to get rid of it. Because this one, nobody must hear. So my classmates called my mom. They stole my mom's number from my phone. And called my mom and told her that if you don't want your daughter to die, come and carry her because she's pregnant. That's what they told my mom. How that happened, I don't know. I just went out one day, and by the time I got back, it was late in the evening. And my then landlord told me that my mom was there. I was like, my mom, okay, she has never been here. How? Because I was in school in Lagos. And she had to come from Ogun State. And I'm like, how? She has never been here. She doesn't know this. How now? He said, okay. She said, you should call her when you come back. I think I had a bad phone there, so she couldn't reach me when she was around. So I called her, and she told me that, Deborah, if I am your mother, meet me at home now. I say, ha, it's late. I can't travel now. I'll join you the following day. I didn't know whatever for. Apparently, she had called my dad, too, because my dad was out of station. So all of us met at home. And as you are pregnant, I wanted to disappear. Actually, no. She said, don't lie to me, I'm a nurse. And she examined me herself. And she said, who? And I said, the first person. Yes, the same person. And, okay, my dad entered the house at that time. So both of them just decided that if you don't come to this house with him, don't come to this house again. And that's how they did me safe journey, and I came back to Lagos.
We work together.
Real Talks with Lola on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. I've been having a very frank and mind-bubbling talk with Debbie Akintokunbo Idowu, and she's been taking us through a journey of our emotional wounds. Like I said, life throws a lot of things at people, and the process, like, is always so easily said that when life throws you lemons, you make lemonade. But hey, I've realized that the process of making lemonades can be a little bit daunting. Yes, Debbie has gone through quite a few. I mean, when you look at her right now, when you listen to her, you would see a vibrant and bubbly young lady. But what she has done to herself is that she's gone through a very traumatic emotional wound, but she's been able to own it and realize that, okay, you know what? The only way I can move on is by owning this situation that I am right now. And that is what is called our truth. And she's hoping that by sharing this, other people can learn from it, especially young ladies can learn from it and know that, you know what? When life happens, you just need to hold on to what you think is good for you and move on. Sometimes it's not what the society thinks, it's what you think is good for you. I am Debbie. Thanks for taking us through some of your journey. Now, I'm going to go dive straight in into the my questions. And the first question that came in right now, you talked about the fact that, you know, it wasn't once, it wasn't second time, and you've answered partially that yes, society had a role to play in it. But again, I'm asking this question before I take the question from the listener. When you felt at that point in time that, okay, you know what, this is the only thing I have left. I mean, I'm assuming the first one was a mistake. I mean, well, the child isn't a mistake. No child is a mistake, because they are all creation of God, and I don't think he makes mistakes. You understand? So I think the first one was not planned, but the second one, I would ask you a question. Didn't you know about prevention?
Did I know about prevention? Yes.
Okay.
But I used to have a very funny cycle.
Okay.
A very funny cycle. It might not, I think, when I started paying attention, it used to take about 45 days for the next one to come. Yeah, it used to take about 45 days. So at some point, I decided to pay no heed to it. Because, of course, it's not like I'm meeting with any man or anything. So let it decide not to come for myself. It's not my business. I wasn't bothered. Yeah. So I was like that until I'm seeing him. I was in Lagos. At some point, it was in Ilori. At some point, it was in Kutonu. So it wasn't an every time thing. It was just maybe once in a while kind of visit, maybe once in three, because we can make up today and then start fighting tomorrow, and we can fight. You said this, I said that, your father said this, your mother. So we always had issues. So I wasn't paying any heed to prevention or contraceptives or anything, because it wasn't an everyday thing. So it was just one of those one-offs. And then I didn't know that I was pregnant until about 3 months after, because of my irregular cycle.
My cycle, okay.
Yes, I didn't know. But then people just look at it like, no, first one can be a mistake, the second one is not a mistake. You two, you're not a serious somebody. And you know, and then they judged me based on that. But it's my life. Anybody can judge me how they can. It's not my concern. I am the one that is wearing the shoe.
Okay, so I understand what you feel. Yep. Now, that is where we're going to talk about psychologically. You're human, no matter what. And we all have feelings. Yep. We feel things. And especially because of the kind of environment that we come from, especially we as Nigerians, we tend to always be ruled by, I mean, you said your mom had that problem, but it's just a Nigerian factor. We're always subconsciously ruled by, you know, what would people say?
Yes.
It's just there in the corner, locked in somewhere. Mm-hmm. So how did you feel sincerely, first time, second time, how did you feel?
I cried almost every day.
Wow.
I cried almost every day. But I didn't do it where people would pity me, because I didn't want a pity party.
Okay.
So at some point, even my mom thought, me, I like your own. I didn't have what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
What a lot of people didn't know that I was secretly in pain. My heart felt shredded.
Yeah.
And the only thing I ever wanted was for him to come and own up, say, okay, I want you and I want my boys. That was the only thing I ever wanted. Because then, it was like, yes, then, yeah, then, not now, not anymore. That ended about 6 years ago.
No, I understand that, because you were quite young then. You couldn't see, you couldn't see
that
beyond
was,
your
that
nose.
That was the only thing I ever wanted. And you know, it looked as if my life had ended. There was no going forward. There was no going backward. The plans I had crumbled. I didn't even now know which way to go. I didn't know where to turn to. I was just a confused human being. Today I'm red. Tomorrow I'm blue. Next tomorrow I'm black. Other times I'm white. Today I'm laughing. Next tomorrow, I have a terrible mood swing. Sometimes it looks I'm crazy. It totally affected my fashion sense. I lost the zeal to look good. I lost the interest to dress up and go out. I gradually disappeared into myself. I became a couch potato. The only thing I know how to do is to hustle and make money. That's the only thing that became important to me.
To you,
but deep down within me, no, I am still in pain, but not pain of what I felt. My baby will be 14 in December. Yeah, so not pain of what I felt 10 years ago. No, a different version of the old pain entirely. But then, aside from what people see on the outside, it was totally different from what was happening on the inside.
Okay, so if you were to advise your young self and the young people listening to you, what advice would you give from when you finished your NECO? And now, this is a three-part question. Advise your young self, advise the people listening to you, and advise parents, because I'm going to talk from a parental point of view and as a professional again when we get there. But so, answer those three questions. Advise your young self. What would you have done different?
Advice to my young self: trust your guts.
Good.
That's it. Trust your guts.
Okay.
It took a while for me to believe or to understand that most times, our intuition is never wrong.
Okay.
Trust your guts. The other part of it is, know what you want and stand by it. Know what you want and stand by it. I got my first admission the year I was 15. If I had followed through with that admission, my journey would not be what it is.
Wow.
But then most times I just say that maybe I have my journey because I am meant to bring light to some people with my story.
Okay.
So maybe that is why I have the journey that I have. Because I am meant to, and truthfully, over time, I've had friends that had my kind of issue, and they run to me to talk to me so that I can talk to them, so that I can help them through it emotionally, psychology, helping them to stand up for themselves, stand up to face their parents. In particular, I had one that she wasn't going to tell her parents that she got pregnant. And I'm like, girl, you have to do this. Well, apples will not fall. What will happen. But this one, we will tell Mumsy. Mumsy can only shout, talk, complain, beat you, slap you, do everything. But then, at the end of it, you are still a daughter. So okay, I've been able to help friends through that journey as well because of my own experience.
Okay, now, what do you advise? Now, like I said, this is a three-part question. Now, yes, what do you advise young people listening to you? Because you see, one of the most common problems with youngsters and is peer pressure.
Yep.
It's very, very common, peer pressure. Sometimes they do things like you. I mean, you were very truthful when you said you wanted to belong. And I think that is one of the most bane of problems with teenagers. You understand? You don't want to be looked at as, you know, you're not...
A small girl that doesn't know anything.
Exactly. Or that you're not funky. You know, you're not these, you're not that. You understand? That's one of the bane of the problems I know young. So what would you advise young people listening to you? I mean, apart from the fact that you should follow your intuition,
we should as youngsters, we should be encouraged to have mentors outside our parents that we can actually talk to without being judged.
Good.
Every parent should allow that. Every parent should allow their teenage children to have mentors aside their parents that they can actually talk to without the fear of being judged.
Well, I'm so happy you're saying this because you see, that is another problem. And you know, one of the things I've noticed before I give you my conclusion is this. Now, what advice do you have to parents so that they don't, because I think sometimes, not all the time, overbearing parents without knowing, because no parents would definitely want anything bad for their child, but sure, unknowingly can push a child out there.
Yeah.
So what advice do you think you can
give parents? I think as parents, we should create an atmosphere where you can communicate with your child without your child being afraid of being judged by you.
Okay.
We lived in an area where it was more like community parenting. Yes. So even if my mom is not around and I do something wrong and my neighbor knows about it, my mom will know before she gets home what I did. Because it is from the junction that they would have been reporting me. Ah, mommy Debbie did this, Debbie did that. Ah, I've spoken to her, or in fact, I've talked to her, talked senses into her. But then my mom will get to and come and say, Ngo, come here. Mommy like Baja said this, da 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 da. And before I can say, I want to explain my whole beating has started. Bag, bag, bo, bo. You know, okay. But then, if there was this enabling environment where even before something happened, I can call, before neighbors know, I can call my mom and say, Mom, I need to talk to you when you get home, please.
Okay, good.
Good enough. I don't know how I was able to do that, but with my son, my first son, I've been able to apply it, say, 70%, because I'm a Nigerian mother, sometimes do I shout? But then when I shout and I realize that, Debbie, this was one of the issues you had when you were growing up, you also don't want to project this onto your son, I recoil, and then we have a conversation. Yeah, so parents, it's not going to be easy, honestly. It's not an easy thing. It's still a journey I'm on. It's not easy. I shout. I know how to shout. I'm a Nigerian mother. But then when I realize, I get a grip on myself again, and then we have a conversation. That way, your child will trust you and know that even if he messes up, can own up that, see, I've messed up. I know I've messed up, but I can't hide from you. Will it be easy? No. But can we do it? Yes.
So basically what you're trying to say to my listeners today, and I mean, I would say to you, I'm very pleased with your talk with me today, because you see, yes, I am a Nigerian parent, and yes, I have young adults as children. And one of the things I've always said to people is that, now let's look at it from you talking to your younger self and we talking to the other parents. One of the things I've realized that African parents do is that we allow majority of the time for societal factors to, you know, determine how we operate with things. And most of the time is always, you know, what will people say?
Yeah.
It's always a determining factor. But again, listening to your stories and everything, it takes me aback, and I'm going to be honest with you. It takes me aback because, number one, your mom is a professional. She's a nurse. Okay? I'm sorry. I believe that, you see, like you said in Yoruba, and I will say it in Yoruba again, they say the honey bee doesn't sting you twice.
Yeah.
Because when it stings you once, you feel the pain. By the time it stings you the second time, it's either two things. It's either you're stupid, I'm sorry about the language, or you don't know what you're doing. So I think one of the problems Africans have, especially Nigerians, is not a problem. It's just because that is what we know. And I always say, because of what you know, you cannot give what you don't have.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's the word. That's the word.
You can't give. No. It's just the truth. I think things are beginning to change now. You know, people are becoming more aware, more enlightened. Because, I mean, I'm very sure if you had been educated about the opposite sex, about the things that could come out, do you think you would find yourself in this situation?
Like I said, I was educated. I just didn't take it serious. Like, it can't happen to me. No, it can't happen
you're
to
too
me.
Smart.
Yeah, that was like, I thought I was smart until it happened to me.
Yeah, so that's why I'm coming
because,
to.
Because I was aside from my mom being a pastor, she was our Sunday school teacher in church.
Okay.
So I had nothing less than 15 female friends.
Mental.
That were my female friends that were my age mates that my mom used to talk to together.
Oh,
so we created like a group. So one Saturday in the month, we'll go to church. She will talk to us, she will advise us. She would encourage us. She would take us out for excursion. She would, you know. So it would be me being ungrateful if I say I was not exposed to sex education. I actually was, but I didn't take it serious. But right now, none of my other friends, was pregnant as a teenager. No, none of them.
Wow, that must have been a very hard blow for your mom.
That's what I'm saying. That she didn't. When I tell her what happened, she just didn't want me to come to the house again. Like, what happened now? Are you the only one? In fact, the year my mom turned 50, one of my friends that was coming to that, she was gonna come see me in the house because I was around. I thought I was around, but she was gonna come see me. And then when I met her up at the junction, she was wearing trousers, and then she was shaking. She was fidgeting. I was like, "What happened?" She said, "Huh." That she's wearing trousers. She said, "My mommy will not complain like this." You know, she was still picturing my mom of those days when we were growing up. She was like, "Hey," because that's the kind of person Yadebora is. You cannot mess up around her. She will not take it lightly with you. So she also had that kind of influence on all the teenagers around her then. So now imagine our own daughter getting knocked up.
Yeah, so she was hands-on. Well, but again, like I said, things happen, and nobody decides who it's going to happen to. It can just happen to anybody. But now, let's quickly touch on your 2019 experience. You've gone through your situations. you've overcome them. They were like, I mean, like you said, and I'm happy you said so. It's human. You were very, very, you were hurt. Because, you see, things didn't turn out the way you wanted it to turn out. And every girl has a dream of this knight in shining armor, which I'm very sure that person was to you. No, every girl has that dream at one point in time. So, fast forward to 2019. What happened to you?
It was just me trying to... Okay, I've left my job. Okay, after the whole scenario, my second child and all that, I had to go get a job. And then I was working like a jackass, and my pay wasn't commensurate to what I was earning as an architect. And then one day I just walked out from the job because it was frustrating. And then the boys were complaining that, Mommy, we don't see you again. We are not available. We are missing you, you know. And I just walked out on the job. And I think that was 2017.
As a teenage parent.
Come again. I didn't get that.
It must have been tough for you as a teenage parent.
Yes, it was. It was because, okay, I had the first one. I was in ND. My mom took him from me to help me raise him while I go back to school. I was working in between. And then I had the second at HND, and I think I took it home when I was going to write my final exams. And then I had to get a job immediately. So I had to get a job. My salary was, I think my first salary was 30K. I don't know how much that is in dollars, but it was 30K. And I had to take care of two boys with 30K and myself. Then I moved on to get another job. I was being paid 50K. I think that was the longest I did. And it was that 50K job. I wasn't seeing my kids anymore. Like, even I didn't have my weekends to myself. Weekend was supposed to be for the boys, but I didn't have my weekends to myself, and it was becoming frustrating. And they were also complaining. So I walked away. I think I walked away in 2013. And I had to start building my own brand for myself, by myself, without any experience, without any prior exposure, without knowing anybody, without anything. It was just me and my last salary, the last 50K, 60K salary I had. I had to build a business. So I started in 2013. And then I was doing it. To the glory of God, it was a wonderful journey. The experience was, it was a beautiful experience. The downs were plenty. The celebration points were there. And at every point in time, I was celebrating it. And then in 2019, it looked as if the inflation that happened then affected my business. And it looked as if everything was crumbling beneath my feet. And then I wasn't finding my footing again. That was the first time I felt like I was in darkness. And it was too tough. It was too tough.
Okay, now, throughout you had the two kids, did you ever seek professional counseling, you know, wanting to know why you made this mistake? And, you know, like, I'm just trying to wrap up now. Because, you see, one of the things I think goes on people's mind, when they're, especially when they're hurt, is when they don't seek help, or when they don't, like you rightly said, and that is the most important thing, having like a mentor that you can talk to, that, you know, that can actually say to you, okay, you know what you're going through is just normal, but it's going to pass. Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of boosts your ego, right?
Yeah.
When you have somebody like that to talk to.
I didn't seek professional help, but I had a lot of people talk to.
Good.
I had a beautiful support system. No, I can't take away the effect my support system had on me. I had a beautiful support system. My parents, I had friends, I had people that believed in me. I had people that would just call me like, we just want to check up on you. I hope you are okay. I hope you are fine. I see that you are strong. I see that you are struggling. I know that there are things that you wouldn't want to talk to anybody about, but just know that we see you and want to encourage you. I don't get random. Sometimes I get random monetary gifts. Sometimes I get random monetary gifts, like we know you are trying, but we know it's not easy. We know it's not enough. Okay, we just want to bless you. Yeah, take. So no, I bless God for a beautiful support system. But no, it wasn't professional, but then I had it, and I enjoyed it. I'm still enjoying it.
That's very good to know. And you know, like I said, one of the things Real Talks with Lola does is I try to strive as a psychologist to bring behavioral modification to people's mindset, because you see, we have a mindset generally that when people see people like you that have had children at your teenage years, it's not something you planned from your story. It's not even something you wished for yourself.
No.
I mean, you could turn back the hands of time. You wouldn't want it to happen at all. Because you have your own dreams and everything. But again, I really appreciate the fact that you've turned your emotional wound into your truth. And you've lived it. And you are still living it. And with every obstacle that it comes with, you're out there to face it and make the best of it.
Yeah.
Before we go, Debbie, what last words do you have to your listeners out there, and what encouragement do you want to give them, especially when somebody is going through a deep emotional wound like this? What encouragement?
I think most of the time, people going through deep emotional wound is not really written on their face. I'm going through. So I will just say that as humans, let us try to be kind to fellow humans, because you don't know what the other person is going through. And the other person might not even want to talk about it. I understand that everybody has their own issues. We all have our own issues. But if we learn to be kind to each other, no matter what the situation or the circumstance is, the world will actually be a better place. So all of us should always carry kindness behind our hearts.
Yeah, thanks so much. Because you see, some people will say things like, oh no, when it happened the first time, maybe if she has been beaten, if she has been this, if she has been disowned, if they've been thrown out of the house.
Black and blue on my body. Beating did not change anything, no. Don't be stupid. My parents are strict. They beat, don't be stupid in my body. I decided I wasn't going to train my kids with beating. I'd rather communicate.
Exactly.
Beating toughens me. Beating toughens me. I'll be like, let them beat me. Hey, after beating, we'll continue. Beating toughened me. No matter what, there was no kind of beating. My parents did not beat me. Beating toughened me. It didn't make me a better person at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, you believe strongly that, I mean, when things like this happen, the person involved is going through their own, a lot of emotional wounds, and the best way to deal with it is by communication. Be kind and communication, because, I mean, like you said, nobody wants that. Thank you so much, Debbie. I mean, I know go on and on with you today, and I'm going to have my round table on this issue again. I'm going to bring you on again, because you see, one of the things I've learned is that sometimes, like you rightly said, we judge as humans. We judge a lot, and we do not know what is going on out there, and that is why I always say that, you know, sometimes. You do not know where the shoe pinches until you've walked those shoes.
Somebody looking
at your story will think, what rubbish. She had the first one. She didn't learn. Then she went on to have the second one, not knowing what your story really is. You didn't go out of your way, or generally be not think by getting into the second one. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us on Real Talks with Lola on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And anybody listening out there today would have learned one or two things from what you've had to share. And parents, teenagers, I'm very sure would have picked up one or two things from your story today. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a lovely week ahead.
Thank you very much, ma'am. God bless you.